Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on CSNBayArea.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Maiocco.
The New England Patriots have been, for the better part of two decades, what the San Francisco 49ers were in the 1980s and 90s. On Sunday, one of the best teams in the NFL comes to Levi's Stadium to face one of the worst teams in the league. Today on the 49ers Insider Podcast, we'll talk to my colleague Tom Curran of CSN New England. We'll talk to him a little bit later about how the Patriots modeled their franchise after the Eddie DeBarlow and Carmen Policy 49ers of the 80s and 90s. But we're going to start off with a question from one of our Facebook followers. Diego Corona asks, assuming Kaepernick keeps growing the rest of the season, does the team try to retain him or is his mind made up? Now, that's an interesting question because obviously when the 49ers and Kaepernick decided on that contract restructure, the idea was that Kaepernick would be free to go someplace else at the end of the season, and the 49ers would have no financial ties to him after this current season. I still think that that's the case, that the 49ers are ready to move on and Kaepernick is ready to move on, but you just never know. I mean, I remember a couple of times when Alex Smith was with the 49ers, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion that he would be leaving. I mean, everybody thought he'd be leaving, including his family members, who were quite upset, I think, at times when he decided he wanted to remain with the 49ers after the 2010 season. Jim Harbaugh pretty much talked him into remaining with the 49ers, getting a fresh start right where he had been all along. So I think there are so many variables with the 49ers. You know, Chip Kelly's future, Trent Baalke's future. And so I guess the lesson that I learned is never say never. But I think it's pretty clear that the 49ers need to do something at the quarterback position. Probably their best bet is to look at the veteran market, whether it's a trade or a free agent, Tony Romo, Jay Cutler. And we'll talk a little bit more about Jimmy Garoppolo. Played very well for the Patriots when Tom Brady was suspended. In fact, on Friday, Bill Belichick really spoke very highly of Jimmy Garoppolo and his future. So Garoppolo would be heading into his fourth and final season under his contract. If a right trade comes along, I could see the Patriots making that deal because at the end of 4 years, his contract will be up, and he will be able to get a contract with another team, and that way the Patriots probably wouldn't receive much compensation, perhaps a third-round compensatory pick. So those are some of the situations. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that the 49ers would select a quarterback with their first pick in this draft, especially because the new league year opens more than a month ahead of the draft, so the 49ers can fill their quarterback situation with a veteran player such as the guys that I mentioned. Obviously, the reason Jimmy Garoppolo would be expendable is because the Patriots have Tom Brady. And each week, every team in the league must provide a player for a conference call with the media who covered the opposing team. This week, Patriots quarterback Tom Brady took part in the conference call with a handful of the reporters who cover the 49ers. And here are some of the highlights of that call with Tom Brady.
Is it kind of shocking to you, as long as you've been in the league, this will be the first time playing the 49ers here in the Bay Area?
I know. You know, last time we had the chance in 2008, I had everything arranged and set up before the season and for my family and friends, and then I got hurt. So it is. It'll be a lot of fun. You know, I got, you know, a lot of people coming to the game and you know, it'd just be a great environment.
there any 49er fans remaining in your family?
I don't know. We don't talk about the 49ers anymore. We used to talk. That was all we ever used to talk about. But yeah, that was.
That ended in about 2000.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we were part of the 49er faithful for a long time.
I know you've told the story many times, but can you take us through being a kid in the stands for the catch?
Yeah, I was. I think 4 years old, and my parents brought me, and I cried. I wanted one of those foam fingers. And I cried the entire first half, and finally my dad bought me one to shut me up for the second half. And I think I have a picture of it. And it was just a great game. I remember we were on the opposite side of the stadium, and I started crying when everyone was jumped up and screamed at the end after Dwight made the catch. And, yeah, I mean, I still have those memories.
After all these years, do you still carry a chip on your shoulder of, you know, being passed over by your hometown team?
I think you have different ways, you know, and I have different things that have motivated me at different times. So, yeah, I mean, I'll never forget I worked out for the 49ers, you know, when I was coming out in 2000. And I wasn't, you know, they obviously went in a different direction. And, I mean, that's, I'm very happy where I ended up. And I think I was fortunate to be at the right place at the right time with the Patriots. And I played with so many great players over the years, and I played for great, you know, obviously the best, I feel the best head coach ever, and some great assistant coaches, and, you know, teammates that have committed everything to help us win. So I've just been blessed to play quarterback for this team, and I love doing it, and hopefully I can do it for a long time. It's been a lot of fun, so hopefully we can keep it going.
What goes through your head when people put your name in discussion with Joe Montana as one of the best quarterbacks to ever play?
Well, I don't ever see myself, you know, like him. He was so spectacular, and I think he's in a league of his own. So, you know, I'm going to try to keep finding ways to, you know, to help my team and be the best I can be every week. And I feel like I've learned a lot over the last few years with my style of play. And like I said, I love being here and competing and hopefully winning. And that's what Joe did. He was a winner. I mean, every time he took the field, you know, it felt like the 49ers were going to win. And I remember rooting for that team when Joe was playing quarterback, and you always felt like they were going to win no matter who they were playing, where they were playing at. And same when Steve took over. So that was it was great to be a 49er fan at that time.
All right, that was Tom Brady on this week's conference call. In addition to the questions you heard me ask, you also heard the voices of Dan Brown and Chris Biederman asking Brady about his recollections of the catch as a four-year-old in the stands at Candlestick Park and the comparisons to Joe Montana. Now, to further discuss the 49ers of yesteryear and the Patriots of today, we are joined by the always lively Tom Curran of CSN New England. He has covered just one losing season, Bill Belichick's first year, since he began covering the Patriots in 1997. Here is Tom Curran. Hey, Tom, when a team is 1-8 like the 49ers, you don't have too much experience with this, but you have to take every opportunity to turn the clock back to the glory days. And so this week, the 49ers, it's easy to talk about the glory days because Eddie DeBarlow is being honored. And it kind of struck me that, you know, what the 49ers went through, those great times in the 80s and 90s, the Patriots are experiencing now. Do you see the parallels?
Oh, undoubtedly. I think that when you look at the two NFL franchises, really, that sustained, it's the Patriots and the San Francisco 49ers. You can mention Pittsburgh because they've got the most rings and they've won the most championships, but they dipped in the early 80s and they dipped in the late 80s. And then they resurrected in the, you know, the 90s to a degree with Bill Cowher, and then again in the 2000s. But the unstinting nature of both the 49ers from 1981 through, I believe it was about 1998, when they had their run, and I could be wrong on that. And then the Patriots for their 17, 16 seasons now under Bill Belichick, of success, the first one not being that much. But yeah, there's absolutely parallels. And it's also ironic that last week, you know, we spent talking to Pete Carroll, who talked to us about opportunities he felt he missed in New England to implement the 49ers model with the Patriots, which I think was a little bit of revisionist history on the part of Pete, because they were never going to allow him to have that kind of control in New England. But the Patriots have long wanted to model the 49ers. That was forever gold standard that the Crafts and Pete Carroll during his tenure here wanted to emulate.
And do you see teams now, organizations, you know, new ownerships coming in around the league, do you see them trying to model themselves after the Patriots?
In part. And I think that the interesting thing about the Patriots is value, which has, there's so many conflicting dynamics that argue against a startup team having the level of success that the Patriots do. Because you first have to give an immense amount of leeway to the coach. You have to be able to swallow hard and hold your nose during extremely difficult personnel decisions. And you have to say, look, he knows what's best. And even if it looks like it's red to everyone else and he's saying, no, it's blue, believe me, you'll see, it's blue, then you have to stick with him. And that's what the Patriots had to do with Bill Belichick. And that's what they still do with Bill Belichick. You know, Jamie Collins being traded to Cleveland a couple of weeks ago flies in the face of what a conventional team does. Trading away Chandler Jones flies in the face of convention based upon value. And some teams and organizations which are not as successful, i.e. San Francisco at this juncture or the Philadelphia Eagles last year, don't have the ability to go through that crappy period where the coach is making, or GM is making, these head-scratching decisions without pissing off their fan base. And that's why Chip Kelly's the 49ers coach right now. Right? They couldn't do it anymore with him trying to run it like Bill Belichick out in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, Chip and Bill have a very good rapport. And you've seen, weren't there a couple years there where the Eagles had joint practices with the Patriots?
Yes, I was there. I'm a big Chip Kelly guy. I think that he is outstanding and will have every bit of success once he's given that amount of leeway in an organization. And I wonder if he's coaching any differently this year than he was in Philadelphia, knowing that you don't get three chances necessarily.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, all the stuff coming out of Philadelphia was, you know, about – you know, he lacked emotional intelligence and all of this, and a lot of the players were more outspoken than I've ever heard players, you know, on the record. And you know, I think maybe he's changed a lot here because, man, the players loved his training camp schedule. Today I was talking to Chris Harper, former Patriot, and he was talking about how funny Chip Kelly is and how personable he is and how Bill Belichick is. There's not a whole lot of humor, I guess, especially if you're a young player trying to make your way there, that it's a very serious business with the Patriots. So I guess there are obviously some pretty drastic differences in the personalities of Belichick and Chip Kelly.
There are, but there is, I think that you're on to something with saying Chris Harper might not be as attuned to the humor of Belichick, given that he was a practice squad player, up with the team, sent back down to the practice squad. If you're not finding the humor in that, I think you're just living day to day. But he can be dryly funny, and a lot of players have said that through the years. But yeah, Chip Kelly, I think, is much more outgoing and personable than Bill is. But Bill is a guy that players get along with, generally speaking, because he will tell them what's going on. And when he doesn't know, he'll tell them, I don't know either. You know, he tries to keep it as simple as possible for guys. And I don't know with Chip how he does on the day-to-day with guys, but I would imagine he tries to be as plain-spoken as he can be. What's interesting is you mentioned the climate after he left Philadelphia, and it was a real feeding frenzy with him. kind of the same thing with Greg Schiano when he left Tampa Bay. I think that guys come in and there's a preconceived notion of how they're going to be based upon their how they're prepackaged and sold by the media. Mm-hmm. And the ones who come in with Bill Belichick's imprimatur on them are sometimes colored as, oh, he's not going to be a coach, he's going to be a pain in the ass. And then they make sure that comes to fruition so that Schiano becomes Napoleon and Chip Kelly becomes, you know, any number of really offensive things in addition to being lacking in emotional intelligence.
Right. And the two guys you just mentioned are college, you know, guys who came from the college ranks who kind of could be the man in college, probably more, you know, more powerful than any administrator in their respective colleges.
Right. And it's the funny thing is, and look, I'm 49 years old, turned last week, and no longer am I a contemporary of the players. And I think that as it goes, there is more asking of why and do we have to do this? And there is a greater draw from off-field communication outlets and business opportunities than ever before for players. So the button-down, almost militaristic blinders on football dogma that Belichick and Schiano adhere to is probably a little harder to enact now than it would have been when Belichick started. And right now, Matt, because Belichick's up and running, players don't know the Belichick who used to be challenged, mm-hmm. who used to have guys speak out and say things and push back against him. But that guy was out there. It happened.
You know, and Bill Walsh was much the same way. I mean, he could be ruthless, you know, with some of his personnel decisions. And then you had the other side, Eddie DeBarlo. Well, Eddie was obviously, he didn't have a whole lot of patience either. But what he really tried to do was develop relationships with the players. And in talking to Bob Kraft, he says that's the one thing that he learned when he came out to meet with Eddie and Carmen Policy. He saw the relationships and how Eddie interacted with the players and how the players felt about him. Has Bob followed through on that? Does he have a good relationship with his players?
Yes. Almost to an unseemly level sometimes to me. And it's his team. He can do what he wants, but, you know, he's 70 plus years old, hanging out with sneakers on instead of, you know, he's totally reinvented himself since he took over the team and become much more aligned with a younger person's mindset. And there's a little bit of the chameleon to that. I'm not saying it lacks authenticity because, it's, you know, you are what you are. But there are times when I feel that he gloms on to the players a little bit based upon their status with the team sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, his first fifth son was Drew Bledsoe. Ironically enough, the next fifth son was the next superstar quarterback, Tom Brady.
Yeah, well.
Why isn't the fifth son ever the backup safety, special teamer?
Well, he picked a pretty good fifth son the second time around.
Yes.
And I mean, that's, you know, and again, another parallel. See, I keep bringing it back to the 80s and 90s with the 49ers. Well, this is mostly the 80s, but just think Bill Walsh and Joe Montana and Belichick and Brady. It's so symbiotic.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Because I'm constantly, I think that the Belichick-Brady duo is often dismissed as, well, without one, there wouldn't be the other.
Yeah.
And I don't recall that ever being a dynamic with Walsh and Montana.
I'd say
a little bit. Where it would sit. Okay, yeah. Well, without Walsh, Montana would have sucked?
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I think everybody...
Because that's what it is. That's what's contended many times with Brady. He's a system quarterback. Well, they're all system quarterbacks. They're all parts of the system. But Steve Bono had some success, and Steve Young had some success. And Steve Young was not the quarterback that Joe Montana was by any stretch of the imagination, in my estimation.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I haven't heard what you know, I think out here we haven't heard that about Brady.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of news to me because I look at Brady. I was just talking to someone today, and I was just saying, man, Brady is like the perfect quarterback and seemingly the perfect quarterback for any system. And, I mean, how did these teams, how did every team miss on him? Because the Patriots obviously missed on him. You know, if a guy goes in the sixth round of the draft and he turns out to be one of the all-time greats, you missed on him five times.
Right.
And so I think with Joe was a I think less physically talented, but man, that system was perfect for him. He just had the knack. He had it. And that's the thing, I guess, that nobody could measure with Joe Montana or Tom Brady, that it factor.
Well, what both of them did have in terms of tangible, in my estimation, was accuracy.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other player who I can think of as being just absurdly accurate, ironically enough, is a guy who's stuck in the middle of those two in terms of Super Bowls, Troy Aikman. I've never, those are the three most accurate passers that spring to mind when I think of who is the most accurate. You know, they don't just throw guys into extra yards, and that's what I think is spoken about with Brady as being a downgrade to people as well. He's not a great downfield thrower. And there's enough highlights of Joe Montana throwing downfield to Jerry Rice where that's not a rap on him, but whereas the 49ers West Coast passing offense was predicated on slants. Patriots are more on option routes and crossers and seam kits, interestingly. Stuff coming back toward the line of scrimmage or reliant upon, you know, two-way go type routes. But they are both brilliant athletes who wouldn't test out as great explosive athletes, but brilliant hand-eye athletes, in my estimation.
And they also are just hyper-competitive. And, you know, when Steve Young came here, it was, you know, it wasn't pretty. And, you know, Joe Montana was not going to give up his starting job. And, you know, you see with Brady.
He's not psyched about the presence of Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
Not to the same extent, but I think that in his heart of hearts, if you gave him truth serum, when they drafted him in the second round, he would have said, yeah, I'm going to choke him out. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a debate. Not coincidentally, the year they draft him, they win a Super Bowl. And he has a transcendent year capped by a transcendent Super Bowl after struggling in the first four games. They are both. And also, I'd say, too, Matt, confidence. Absolutely not a shred of self-doubt.
Yeah. Well, you brought up Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't know if you've noticed here, the 49ers have some quarterback problems.
Uh-huh.
And Chip and Bill do have a good rapport. And Garoppolo is 1 year away from leaving as a free agent. And I guess the best the Patriots could get out of that deal would be a third-round compensatory pick. I would suspect there will be teams interested in acquiring Mr. Garoppolo this offseason. What do you think?
With the 2019 restructure for Tom Brady, he signed through that year. I think it has changed the landscape a little bit. But with Brady only being on the books for $14 million in 2018 and 2019, I think there's still a decision to be made. As good as Brady is, as good as he will be, Bill Belichick is always asking himself, okay, don't tell me what is now, tell me what will be. In some of these situations, when a player is further along, you know, who's better now is one thing, but who's going to be better in 2 years is the other. And that's how they keep the program recycling and regrowing, is they don't get attached to Troy Polamalu or James Harrison or Ray Lewis. You know, they flush them and they move on, as painful as it may be. So I don't think the decision's made that it will certainly be Jimmy Garoppolo. And I know that Tom Brady, in his heart of hearts, also knows that there could be a point at which they try to trade me. Hmm. They're not going to trade me wherever the hell they want to, I think, is what he would say, because I just won't go. But I don't think that he would rule out of his mind the notion of Bill Belichick saying, yeah, we're moving on from you, Tom. We just don't need to see it for him.
Yeah. Did you see enough of Garoppolo? Have you seen enough of Garoppolo to make you, you know, kind of determine one way or the other if this guy really could be I wouldn't say franchise quarterback.
I'd say top 15.
Top,
I'd
really?
Okay. I'd say right now he's good enough to be in the top 15, provided a reasonable amount of offensive line protection. It's just the greatest equalizer, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you can't protect them, they're screwed. Don't even bother. Don't even bother drafting them until you get the five pieces in place and a great offensive or a very good offensive line coach. That would be my strategy.
Yeah.
Because look at all these guys who just get ruined. Blaine Gabbert, you know what? Drafting down in Jacksonville, they couldn't block you and me. And now, you know, he's on his second team, and he's going to be a first-round guy who just, you know, yeah, I remember him. He was in the league.
Yeah. So Jimmy Garoppolo.
Garoppolo is a good enough player, provided people around him.
Yeah. I mean, he's better than Osweiler, right? He could get $18 million right now.
Yes, he's better than Osweiler because I think he has better feet and is way more accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, he's better than Bortles.
Right.
You know, I'm still a Colin Kaepernick guy.
Are
you? That? I mean, I just can't imagine the run that he had in that 2012 Super Bowl season as being just smoke and mirrors.
Right. And you saw him just about at his best on that rainy Sunday night in Foxborough.
It was funny because after that game, I do a TV show with Gerard Mayo, and I still do. And I asked him about Kaepernick, and he goes, "He only reads half the field."
Really?
He goes, "Kaepernick, he's a great athlete, but he doesn't. You know, he's only reading half the field. He's not." So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and there you go. I mean, that's the reason. I mean, that, you know, teams have been able to game plan that, and Arizona could, you know, last year baited him into some throws. So let's talk again after the game Sunday, and I'll see if you've changed your mind on Colin Kaepernick and his future. But I'm going to let you go, Tom, but one final question I ask everybody. You've been around the league a long time. You've been to every NFL city. Is there any city in particular that when it pops up on the Patriots schedule, you circle it and go, I can't wait to get there?
Huh. San Diego.
Yeah. The weather.
Long-ass flight.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh is extremely underrated.
I agree.
I like to stay in Fort Lauderdale when I go to Miami. You know, I got stuck in the Tenderloin District for 7 days.
So,
when we did the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And it literally impacted my entire outlook on life for for weeks. I mean, geez.
Not in a good way, I take it.
No, not in a good way. I would call home. I'm depressed. I'm depressed.
Yeah.
I'm literally depressed.
So are you going to be in – will you be in Santa Clara when you come out here?
I'm flying into San Jose. Going to rent a car or maybe take a drive up to Monterey, take a look around, head back, and then cover the game on Sunday. So I'll see you then.
All right, Tom.
But I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so am I. Hey, thank you so much for taking part in the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Matthew.
A big thanks to Tom Curran of CSN New England for taking the time to join me before he heads out to the Bay Area this weekend. And thanks to you for listening to the 49ers Insider Podcast. It's available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on CSNBayArea.com.